and gentlemen, good day, and welcome to the Q3 FY 2018-2019 earnings conference call of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, moderator. Welcome to Glenmark's Q3 earnings call. First, a review of the operations for the quarter ended December 31st, 2018. For the third quarter ended December 31st, 2018, Glenmark's consolidated revenue was at $2,550 million, recording an increase of 15.95%. For the nine months ended December 31st, 2018, Glenmark's consolidated revenue was at $7,309 million, recording an increase of 7.02%. Formulation business, India. Sales from the formulation business in India for the third quarter was at $6,675 million, recording growth of 15.39%. As per IQVIA MAT, December 2018, Glenmark is ranked 14th with a market share of 2.16% in IPM. Glenmark's India business has consistently grown ahead of industry. Glenmark now has nine brands among the top 300 brands in the Indian pharmaceutical market. India, Glenmark's consumer care business. Glenmark's consumer care business grew in excess of 33% in the third quarter FY 2019. As per IQVIA MAT, December 2018, Glenmark's leading brand, Candid Powder, recorded 7% value growth, highest among the top three brands, which account the majority of sales. Candid Powder continues to be a market leader with share of about 44.70%. VWash Plus continues to hold a leading position in its respective category. As per IQVIA, VWash Plus recorded 57% growth and has 50% market share in the third quarter of FY 2019. Together with the recently launched extension, VWash Wow sanitary pads, the VWash franchise has registered sales growth of 72.9% in FY 2019. U.S. sales. Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Inc. USA registered revenue from the sales of finished dosage formulation was at $8,556.75 million, recording an increase of 16.28%. This translates to the U.S. sales of $119 million. In the third quarter of FY 2019, Glenmark was granted approvals for nine products in the U.S. market, including eight approvals and one tentative approval. Africa, Asia, and CIS region. For the third quarter, revenue from Africa, Asia, and CIS region was $3,401.20 million, as against $3,221.30 million, recording an increase of 5.58%. Glenmark's Russia business was moderate, or performance was moderate in the third quarter. According to IQVIA MAT December 2018 data, Glenmark's Russia business grew by 4.8% in value and 8.6% in units. The Asia and Africa region continued to perform well, growing in excess of 15% in secondary sales in the third quarter. The Asia region recorded secondary sales growth, which also led by key subsidiaries such as Malaysia, Philippines, and Sri Lanka. The Africa region also posted strong secondary sales growth in the third quarter, aided by robust growth in key markets such as Kenya and South Africa. Europe. Glenmark's Europe operations for the third quarter was at $3,217 million, recording an increase of 43.15%. The Western European business continued to expand through increased penetration on the overall commercial portfolio in the Nordic region, Germany, Spain, and Netherlands. Overall, both the Western European and the Central Eastern European region recorded strong secondary sales growth. The overall regional growth was led by multiple new product launches across markets. Glenmark launched five products in the Nordic countries, two products each in Netherlands and Germany, and also three products in Poland. Latin America. Glenmark's revenue from its Latin America and Caribbean operations was at $1,014 million, recording an increase of 12.91%. For the third quarter, Glenmark recorded good growth in constant currency, especially in key markets such as Brazil and Mexico. Before we go on to the specialty and the R&D business, I would like to hand it over to Bob Mattsick for overall comments on the North America and also on the API business. Over to you, Bob.
Okay. Thank you, Jason, and thanks everyone for joining us today. Before I get into the quarterly performance of the North American business, I'd like to provide a few updates. In December 2018, Glenmark announced that Glenmark Therapeutics Inc. USA, a wholly owned subsidiary of Glenmark Holding S.A., will be dedicated to developing and commercializing specialty branded medicines in dermatology and respiratory. This represents Glenmark Pharmaceuticals' first foray into the branded segment in the U.S., an important step in the company's long-term strategy to build a robust specialty branded business in the U.S. alongside the company's existing and successful generics business. In support of this new business, Glenmark Therapeutics recently acquired the rights to 7 branded dermatology products from Exeltis USA, Inc., and expects to launch additional dermatology products over the next year. For our NDA filing for Ryaltris, during the second quarter of calendar year 2018, Glenmark announced the acceptance of the company's first NDA for Ryaltris intended for the treatment of seasonal allergic rhinitis in patients 12 years of age and older. The FDA has notified Glenmark that it requires additional time for a full review of the submission and has extended the March 21, 2019 action date by the standard extension period of 3 months. The extended PDUFA is now June 21, 2019. The extension June 21st, 2019. The extension requested no additional studies. We will continue to work closely with the FDA with the goal of meeting the new PDUFA date. In terms of this quarter's business performance, the North America finished dosage form business, which includes Canada and the U.S., closed the third quarter with recorded revenues of $119.36 million or 8,556.75 million rupees, an increase of 16.28 from last year's corresponding quarter, which was $113.7 million or 7,358.89 million rupees. On the approval side, the U.S. was granted 9 approvals for the U.S. market during this quarter. This includes 8 final approvals and 1 tentative approval. The final approvals were as follows: azelaic acid 15% gel, etovaquone oral suspension, hydrocortisone valerate cream 0.2%, hydrocortisone valerate ointment 0.2%, fluocinolone acetonide topical oil 0.01%, body oil, scalp oil, and ear drops, and finally teriflunomide tablets. In total, we have fiscal year to date 22 ANDA approvals with 17 final approvals and 5 tentative approvals. Glenmark's marketing portfolio through December 31st, 2018 consists of 148 generic products authorized for distribution in the U.S. market. The company currently has 54 applications pending in various stages of the approval process with the U.S. FDA, of which 28 are paragraph 4 applications. On the API side, revenue from the sale of API in regulated and semi-regulated markets globally was 2,392.47 million rupees for the third quarter ended against 2,316.48 million rupees for the previous quarter, recording an increase of 3.28%. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Jason.
Thanks, Bob. Just further updates on Ryaltris in terms of licensing. Glenmark announced an exclusive licensing agreement with Yuan Corporation for commercializing Ryaltris in South Korea. Under the terms of the agreement, Glenmark will be responsible for manufacturing and supplying of the product, while Yuan will be responsible for regulatory filing and commercialization of Ryaltris in South Korea. Glenmark will receive an upfront payment, regulatory and commercial milestone payments, as well as royalties from Yuan. Recently, Glenmark also announced an exclusive licensing arrangement with Grand Pharma China for commercializing Ryaltris in China. Under the terms of the agreement, Glenmark will again be responsible for manufacturing and supplying Ryaltris, while Grand Pharma will be responsible for regulatory filing and commercialization of Ryaltris in China. Glenmark will receive an upfront payment, regulatory and commercial milestone payments, as well as royalties from Grand Pharma. Ryaltris represents the continued commitment towards building a global branded business in the specialty respiratory segment. The company plans to commercialize Ryaltris in several key markets globally and has already initiated product filings in key markets. GBR-310, during the second quarter of FY19, Glenmark announced results from a phase 1 study that suggests similarity in pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic, safety, and immunogenicity profile between GBR-310 and the reference product Omalizumab marketed in the U.S. under the brand name Xolair. The company targets to initiate a phase 3 study in FY20. GSP-304 is currently in phase 2 and the company is targeting to continue development as a treatment for patients suffering from COPD. Just an update on Glenmark Life Sciences Limited. Glenmark forayed into the API business in 2003 and over the last 15 years has built a large business based on product selection, focus on key regulated markets, maintaining high operational efficiency. The API business has grown almost at a 14% CAGR over the last 3 years, maintaining consistently high EBITDA margin. In order to further its potential in the global market, Glenmark has transferred its API business into a wholly owned subsidiary named Glenmark Life Sciences Limited. Subsequent formalities related to the business transfer were completed on 1st Jan 2019. For the 9 months FY19, the unaudited consolidated revenue for Glenmark Life Sciences Limited was at 10860 million, recording growth of 10.2% over the corresponding period. Innovative R&D. Glenmark yesterday announced that its board of directors has given an in-principle approval to spin off the innovation business into a new company in the U.S. Setting up of the new company will provide enhanced focus to the innovation business and help accelerate the pipeline towards commercialization. The new innovation company will be a wholly owned subsidiary of Glenmark and will be based in the U.S. It will have an independent board and a new chief executive officer. The other members of the management team and the team remain unchanged. All the innovative molecules in the pipeline, including preclinical assets and technology, the R&D centers in Switzerland, the R&D center in Paramus, the innovation R&D center in Navi Mumbai, India, and the biologics manufacturing facility in Switzerland, along with all the employees associated with innovative R&D, will be part of the new company. The transfer of assets and employees to the new organization is expected to be completed in the next 6 to 9 months. Highlights on the innovation pipeline. Glenmark's current innovation pipeline consists of 8 assets, including NCEs and NDEs in various stages of development in the area of immunology, oncology, and pain management. Oncology, GBR-1302, HER2-CD3 bispecific antibody, GBR-1302, the phase 1 first-in-human study to determine MTD in patients with HER2-positive cancers, is ongoing in the U.S. and Germany. The study is currently enrolling patients in cohort 9. Pharmacokinetic data from the trial was presented at ESMO Immuno-Oncology Congress in December 2018. GBR-1342, CD38-CD3 bispecific antibody. For GBR-1342, a phase 1 first-in-human study to determine the MTD in patients with refractory multiple myeloma is ongoing. Cohorts 1 to 8 have been completed and the study continues to enroll patients into cohort 9. Glenmark also recently announced the decision to launch a phase 1 trial in solid tumors based on non-interventional human translational data. The company intends to file an IND application and initiate clinical trial in CY 2019. GBR-1342 and EGFR-CD3 bispecific antibody. GBR-1372 is progressing well in preclinical development as a potential treatment for colorectal cancer. MAPK1 inhibitor. Glenmark obtained exclusive global rights into a small molecule oncology compound based on antigen-presenting cell biology through a licensing arrangement signed with APC Therapeutics Inc. in 2017. The compound is currently progressing well through preclinical studies and the company is targeting FY20 to initiate clinical development. GBR-830 OX40 antagonist. A phase 2B study of GBR-830 has been initiated and will enroll 312 adult patients with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. As of February 2019, 68 patients have been recruited with 37 sites actively open to recruit enrolled patients in the US, Canada and Poland. Site initiation in Germany and Czech Republic is expected by end February 2019. Top-line results of the Phase 2B study are expected to be available in H2 FY 2020. In addition to atopic dermatitis, a Phase 2A proof-of-concept study are being planned with patients with SLE and ulcerative colitis. GRC-39815-RORY-gamma inhibitor. GRC-39815 is an NCE currently being evaluated as an inhaled compound for the possible treatment of COPD. The compound is currently in preclinical development and the company plans to initiate a phase 1 study in H1 FY20. GRC-27864 MPGS1 inhibitor. GRC-27864 is currently enrollment for phase 2B studies is going on in 624 patients with osteoarthritic pain of the knee and hip. This is progressing well as per the plan, with 29 active sites in India and 241 patients recruited so far in the study. Glenmark plans to complete trial recruitment by end H1 FY20. Top-line results of the Phase 2B study are expected in H2 FY20. GRC-17536, the TRPA1 antagonist, a positive Phase 2A proof-of-concept study of GRC-17536 conducted in Europe and India in patients with painful diabetic neuropathy has been completed. Glenmark is targeting to initiate a Phase 2B dose-ranging finding study in neuropathic pain in FY20. With that, we'd like to give some overall comments on the P&L. So the R&D expenditure for Q3 was at 345 crores. The R&D expenditure for 9 months was at 895 crores. The exchange loss in other income was at 130 crores. The FCCB gain in other income was 15 crores, and the other income was 6 crores. With that, I would like to introduce the members of Glenmark's management and then hand it over for Q&A. We have Glenn Saldana, Chairman and Managing Director of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals. We have V.S. Money, Executive Director and Chief Financial Officer of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals. Bob Matzik, President, North America and API. Utkarsh Gandhi, Senior Manager, Investor Relations. With that, moderator, we would like to open the floor for question and answers. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We take the first question from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. My first question is on the US business. We have had a couple of good launches, but the revenue does not seem to be reflecting that fully. Would that be a fair assumption that your market share and the launches that you've made will probably flow in fully in the fourth quarter? And the second part of the US question is, what's our idea for the branded dermatology business that we've acquired? How do you see that? Because the products that we've acquired are currently small. So, do we see products being added to that portfolio over the, next, let's say, 1 year, 2 years? Any color there?
Yeah, so on the U.S. business, I think that we're making good progress in terms of either getting to or realizing our market share. The pricing environment continues to be a bit challenging, but I would kind of classify it as kind of the new normal in pricing. On the dermatology side, we do plan on adding at least a couple of products and launching a couple of new products in the next year.
And these would be from our own pipeline, or these, there are certain potential assets that we're looking at?
These would be our own pipeline.
Okay, understood. And my second question is on the innovative business that we have decided to, subsidize. What's the idea there? What drove this action of sort of separating the innovative business and have, into a separate subsidiary?
So, Neha, there, we're looking at three different things, value drivers, right, for why we're doing this. One is we think it'll bring a much better focus in terms of, what we're doing on the innovation side, and with the new CEO joining and a new board to drive it, right, we think, that focus will be very strong. We're also looking at benchmarking with some of the best biotechs in the U.S., at an overall level. We're also, being a U.S.-led company, we think we'll be able to recruit the best talent on the innovation side. And lastly, of course, we think this can be a significant value unlock for the parent company shareholders as and when we go out and do a capital raise or a or a strategic tie-up with an investor or a partner.
And in terms of your timelines, I'm assuming this would take at least a year of the entire subsidization process?
So the process will take us 6 to 9 months. We've made a lot of progress already on the whole process. So I think within the next 6 to 9 months, we should be, the new co should be effective.
And so how does the value unlocking work? I mean, we have assets in our portfolio, which obviously we're looking to out-license. And then you're talking about potential investment at the subsidiary level for the innovative business?
So again, it's a little early to discuss that. And I think the NewCo board will take a decision on what's the best way to unlock value. But as I said, I mean, longer term, we are open to bringing in either a strategic investor or, looking at different ways of either capital raise or bringing in a strategic partner or investor.
Understood, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. This is a reminder to all the participants connected to this conference. If you wish to ask a question, please press star then one. Next question is from the line of Sian Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, morning. Thanks for taking my question. Can you explain the high amount of forex loss that you have in the P&L and very high other comprehensive income? If you can explain why these numbers are so high.
Sure. So, Sian, this is Mani. Yeah? So, actually, the closing rate of rupee to the dollar as of December 31st was lower, okay, as again 30th September. So, it was at about 69.4 vis-a-vis 72 odd, okay, 0.3 in the September end. Therefore, you have your export debtors and any loans, etc., you give to your subsidiaries, and also your loans that you have taken. So obviously, in our case, these are higher than the loans taken. So therefore, when they are revalued, obviously, when the receivables exceed this is a rupee appreciation, this comes to a negative, okay? So if you look at it in the previous quarter, when it was the other way around, we had a positive of 134 crores, okay? So if you look at the year to date, you have a positive of 138. This is principally normal accounting that is done. So assets and liabilities as of the quarter end are revaluated based on the closing rates. That's why it is there.
So all the assets and liabilities gets revaluated every quarter.
So broadly, in most cases, the assets and liabilities that relate to your like exports and your loans, etc., those are the ones that really impact that. Yeah.
And what about the other comprehensive income?
So we also other comprehensive income in the sense, if you are looking at our other, basically we got about, when we bought back our FCCBs, we got about about 15 crores benefit out of that. And also we have other income, which is about 6-7 crores. This is broadly the overall income.
Okay.
And below the line, when you look at it also, obviously there are some benefits that we get overseas, so the other way around. So therefore, put together, these add to it, yeah.
Okay. Just on India business, the transfer of pain business to True North, is that reflected in this quarter?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. This is a reminder to all the participants connected to this conference. If you wish to ask a question, please press star then one. Next question is from the line of Ranveer Singh from IDBI Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. In this quarter, is there any element of that branded business acquired in US is there, dermatology portfolio?
It's very, very insignificant.
But we have started booking it in our P&L. Yeah?
Correct. I think from Q4 it will reflect.
Yeah, it will reflect more from the Q4. As of now, it's absolutely very, very insignificant.
Okay. And what will the contribution of branded business in India, that consumer business in India?
So on an annualized basis, right, the consumer care business is about 200 crores in total revenues.
Okay. Okay, fine. And what would be the debt as of now? Gross and net, if you
just... Yeah, I'll just give you. So the net debt is about 3430 and the gross debt is about 4705 crores.
Okay, fine. And just another one. In employee cost side and other expenditure also, it seems to have picked up on sequential basis. So what are those?
So employee cost is really not gone up that much. It's about an 8% increase. So that's normal, whatever, you know, because after the July, everybody gets an increment. In the last quarter, obviously, we had the bonus payouts.
Okay.
As far as the other expenses are concerned, we had a little extra spend on the R&D part partly, and also we were also working on a couple of launches, etc., for which goods were getting shipped, so there were some extra expenses on that. Okay.
And okay, so that one rate is likely to continue now.
Yeah, so this is like basically over a period of time, in a full year it levels out. There are some quarters where there is a little excess, that's it.
Fine. And on European business, this run rate, should I take it going forward?
No, I think the European business, I think you should take it quarter by quarter basis.
Okay.
Thanks.
That's it for much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Alok Dalal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Moni, can you give capex number and inventory receivable and payable number?
So I have the capex number, Alok. So this quarter, it's about total both tangible and intangible put together about 390 crores.
Okay. And the other ones, the working capital ones?
These are unaudited. So the inventory was around 2,100 crores, receivables around 2,519, and payables around 2,170 crores.
Okay. And one question on US. So now that your approval cycle has been fairly good, should one expect fourth quarter and fiscal 20 to see a much stronger pickup in US as compared to the first three quarters?
Well, I think, Bob, you want to take that? Or?
Yeah, I think you'll see steady progress on that plan. You can add color commentary to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Sevlamer should help Q4. And I think going forward, this becomes the new run rate, basically.
Okay. And what is the price erosion that your portfolio is witnessing today?
Yeah, for U.S., we're about 8 to 10%.
Okay. So that has come off by 2-3 percentage point over the previous quarter.
It's moderated, but there's still, significant and heavy price competition.
Sure. And for fiscal 20, are there any products that you would like to highlight which could be a good contributor to the portfolio?
So typically we don't, we don't comment on the pipeline. All I can say is, we continue, all our filings continue to be either, first generic, second generic, right, across the portfolio.
Right. But Glenn, are you satisfied with the market share that you're getting with the first generic, second generic kind of products?
Well, I think so far we continue to perform exceedingly well as far as gaining market share, right? If you see all the new launches, whether it is Colsevalum, whether it is Vagifarm, right, generic, we continue to gain some significant market share on a continuous basis. So yes, I think we continue to do very well as far as being able to penetrate the channel and being able to gain market share on all the the launches that we have. And you'll see a similar situation with Sevelamer also.
Okay. And last question, any guidance on how your net debt number could be like towards March end?
I think it should come off a little bit.
Again, it depends a little bit on the currency movements also, Alok. So therefore, I think broadly it should come off a little more, yeah.
Okay, and which areas are you looking at improvement? You mentioned working capital as one area. Are there any other areas that can bring down the net debt levels?
I think across Glenmark, we have significant cost, cost improvement initiatives ongoing. So I think that will definitely help this, Q4 and next year, right, which should help the overall leverage come off.
Okay. In the past, you had given some numbers on net debt to EBITDA. Do you stick to those numbers for fiscal 20?
Yeah, that is what we are trying, I think, to ensure that the net debt to EBITDA keeps coming down and try to reach that 1.25 to 1.5.
All right. Okay, thank you for taking my question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Glenn, on the branded business, is there any, it's a small acquisition that you've done, and I'm not sure how big those products that you're talking about launching are. So is there any thought into the why we started doing launches business at this point of time?
So Nitin, I think the primary purpose of doing this is not for Exeltis, but it's more for the next two launches that are coming up, right, in the branded portfolio, in the branded derm portfolio, right? And we think there is an opportunity to gain from both in terms of market share and in terms of value, right, through these subsequent launches, and that's the reason why we're doing this.
Okay. And secondly, on the generic business in the U.S., as you mentioned, you should have gained a decent amount of market share in Vagifarm, but it doesn't reflect in our QOQ growth in the, in the business for the U.S. We had a couple of pretty decent launches over the last 6 months, right?
Yeah, but there's also...
Yeah, I think...
Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I think, we continue to get our market share on some of these products like Vagifem and Colsevel, we see, increased price competition as well.
Okay, thanks. And lastly, in terms of R&D, how do you see, there's been a lot of rethink in the industry on the investments they're making towards generics R&D. I mean, how are we looking at our sort of generics R&D spend structurally going forward?
Well, we continue to maintain the, the proportion of spend towards generics, right, pretty stable. So I think, our goal is we file 15, 20 ANDAs a year, and we will continue with that run rate. But I think one of the things we've done is we've improved the quality of filings, and we've rationalized some of the products, especially some of the complex generics, right, where we've discontinued some of the developments and things of that nature, right, where we think we won't be competitive.
Okay. And lastly, Glenn, on the innovation business, the value should be like a 6%.
Sorry, Nitin, you got cut off. Can you repeat that?
I'm saying the innovation business value unlocking that we refer to, this would be a FY20 or FY21 event?
I don't think we can guide to that, Nitin, but we're working on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sameer Baisiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Good morning, everyone. Just on the NC spin-off plan, until we get a strategic partner, nothing changes as such, in terms of... the resource allocation, the R&D spending, etc.
That's correct.
Okay. And hypothetically, over whatever time frame, once you get a financial partner or some capital infusion, how do we see it then? Would the capital resources come down for the parent company?
I think there'll be significant reduction, right, in the capital resources. I think that the parent will, over time, right, will have to invest. You know, between the partnerships, the licensing, as well as any capital raise that we do, right, the capital intensity of the investment from the parent should come down.
Okay, great. So that's very helpful. And Glenn, do you have any updated thoughts on Advair for the U.S. market, especially the way the first launch has happened?
As I mentioned the last time, Samir, we are rethinking our whole investment in Advair, right? And we continue to be at the same place. And that's clearly on account of what you're seeing in the market, right? It's very evident that, you know, there's been significant erosion, right, in terms of value and in terms of price, right, as far as the product goes. So it automatically becomes much less attractive.
So this is to read that you would probably be taking it off your pipeline.
There's a possibility we'll do that.
Okay. And any thoughts on mupirocin for any action from the competition?
So far, we are not aware of any competitor who's close. However, in our next year's plan, we continue to build one competitor coming onto the market.
Okay, great. That's all from my side. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Aditya Khemka from TSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Good morning, everyone. A couple of questions from my side. Firstly, Glenn, if you could talk about the Chinese API situation. So many of your peer companies, you know, when they reported results, there was a hit on gross margins because of India business margins sort of tuning down because of raw material cost pressure. Would you could comment on that side of your business? How is it shaping up?
Well, I think this year was a challenging year in terms of the cost side, right? Because of this, the escalation that we've seen from the Chinese APIs. But I think some of that has begun to moderate now. And our view is next year in FY20, right? That should reverse to some extent.
Right. So when you say moderate, are you seeing actual price declines happening in API prices, or you think they will not increase further?
I think they're declining. They're coming back to, closer to the original levels, right? So if I look back, FY18, FY19 saw a big escalation, right, in prices. So FY20, we're expecting prices to come closer to where it was in FY18.
Okay, fair enough. Also on the, again, domestic business, again, on the growth side, so, you know, last 3 years or we have seen challenges in terms of FDC ban, pricing regulation, et cetera, GST. And in your perspective, then, what could be the next year market growth and what would Glenmark aspire to grow at?
So I think, for us, the next 2 or 3 years in domestic should look very exciting in terms of growth. And I think a lot of that is driven by some of the new launches that we are anticipating. So I think the market, my view, will continue to grow at, low double digit, high single digit, low double digit as far as the India market goes. But for Glenmark, you should see significantly higher numbers in terms of growth, purely coming on the back of some very good launches.
So you only just to guide to Glenn about a 15% plus growth in India. Would that still be a valid number given that the market seems to have sort of slowed down?
Well, I think 10 to 15%, right, for us, India growth should continue.
Okay, I get that. And lastly, on the US business side, Glenn, how many launches should we expect in the, I know you're not talking product specific, but could you guide us to a number of launches that you expect to do in terms of next year, FY20 and 21 if possible?
Well, typically you should anticipate that we will launch about, 12 to 15 products a year.
Okay, and how many of these would be sort of large ticket or, difficult to make limited competition products?
I think at least 4 or 5 should be really exciting products from Glenmark.
Perfect. And on Renagel, so could you comment on the competitive landscape as you are about to launch the product? Is there an AG or do you expect another competitor approval sooner?
There's an AG that's in the marketplace right now, but no other generic.
Sorry, I couldn't get that common problem. Is it that there is an AG in the market already?
Yes, there is an AG in the market. Yes.
And is the pricing, the erosion in the molecule, ideally what you would see in a two-player molecule, or is it worse, better?
I mentioned kind of in general that, that's kind of a new dynamic now, and, it's consistent with what we've seen in the most recent past, say, in the past year or so.
Fair enough. Just another question for you, Bob. When you look at the U.S. market, again, many of your peer companies tell us that the focus of the buyers has now sort of shifted from a price point to consistency of supply and, getting a good quality product and avoiding disruption in supplies. Could you comment on how that has shaped up for you? Are you seeing incremental volumes in certain commoditized old products where competition is walking away? And in the same line, could you also tell us as to if you have any FTS penalties this year or last year, and hence what is your track record with supply with your customers?
Yeah, so I mean, on the on the product supply side, I mean, I think we kind of see, depending on the product, right? Certain times we'll see, a need to supply more depending on the situation. But in general, based on limited competition, we don't see any problems. Or we on the commoditized side, we'll sometimes see an ability to increase market share because of some supply problems, but it's individualized by product. You can't just categorize things overall. I don't want to make any comments on failure to supply.
Okay, but if there were failure to supply penalties, would we net it off the revenue, or does it come into other expenses?
Sorry, I didn't get that. Can you please repeat again?
Yeah, Mani sir, if there were any failure to supply penalties, even if 1 crore or $1 million or whatever, would you generally net it off revenue as an accounting practice, or would you put it in other expenses?
No, we'll net it off from the revenue.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, I would like to remind participants, if you have a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Nishan Chandra from TAMSEC. Please go ahead.
Hey, sorry. I put my line on you. I had a question on the net debt numbers. So from a quarter-on-quarter perspective, what has been the increase mean, and does it include the cash inflow from the sale of the branded business?
No. Basically, compared to the previous quarter, our net debt is actually gone lower, okay? It's about 60 crores almost, okay? So partly by the benefit of the currency movements also. And the branded business is pretty insignificant this quarter, so I don't think that really has much to do with it.
No, the divestment to True North, you said that that's reflecting in the numbers. The cash inflow is coming or not yet?
So that happened in the last quarter itself. The inflow that came in, it came in the last quarter itself.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay.
But there was a big currency movement if you look at it from the beginning of the year. So therefore, actually speaking, the net debt from a year-to-year basis should be much lower. But because of the movements of the currency, it's there. Otherwise, on a broad basis, it's much, in a dollar terms, it's lower.
Understood. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Participants, if you have a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Surjit Pal from Prabhudas Leeladhar. Please go ahead. Mr. Pal, you may please go ahead with your question. Mr. Surjit Pal from Prabhudas Leeladhar, you may please go ahead with your question.
You can take the next question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Anubhav here. So, one question on Vegifem. Last time we talked about that our market share is north of 25%. IMS still reflects it to be somewhere about 17-18%. I just wanted to check, is IMS not representing it correct, or we will gain further share in, or has already gained share in this quarter, in quarter four?
I mean, clearly yeah. IMS is... Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you'll see a lag, but I think that internally that's what we're projecting to get.
So, Bob, what we reflected in this quarter, the quarter three, would have been what IMS reflecting. The reported sales would be of a, representing 17-18% share right now?
I think we're a bit higher than that.
Okay, already higher, okay. Glenn, a question on this innovative business spin-off. Just a couple of questions over there. One, putting this business headquartered in U.S. versus Switzerland, any thoughts there?
So I think, you know, we've strategically decided that, you know, the leadership team, right, the CEO and a lot of the independent board members will be based in the U.S. and will come out of the U.S. Pharma and biotech environment. And since, you know, that's where the leading biotechs are housed, right, we think that's the best location. So Switzerland obviously will be a part of NewCo, right? So Switzerland, India, all of them, right? So it's basically, you know, nothing's going to change as far as the, you know, the locations or the developments or the people go, right? It's just, you know, adding a couple of people on the leadership, you know, looking at the business very differently.
Okay, that's helpful. On this business, how much R&D annually we would have spent, like something like $50-60 million? Would that be a right representation?
No, we actually spend close to, I mean, $100 to $120 million.
On an annual basis, $120 million?
At the current run rate.
Only on the innovative business?
That's correct.
Okay. And just one, if we receive any out-licensing income, let's say we get some delay in getting a strategy partner over the next 1 year or something, so will that cash flow be available to reduce debt, or you would say that, no, this is now new subsidiary, so out-licensing?
Yeah, definitely. It will be available to reduce the debt, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And just last question on the U.S. growth rate. Last time we talked about we expect FY20 U.S. growth rate to be a single digit. Now we're talking about two derma products for the branded business, the 505B2s. So you still maintain that even with the inclusion of those two derma products, still our growth rate will be about high single digit?
No, actually, we've not included the branded business in that, okay? I think the last time when we mentioned it was related to the generics business, okay? Right? The branded business is completely separate.
Okay. Okay. So even those two derma new NDAs, you have not taken there?
No, we've not taken any of the derm portfolio or Ryaltris or any of the specialty stuff that we're doing in the U.S.
Okay. Okay, sure. Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Saion Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. Can I get the, you know, 9-month CAPEX number and the breakup of intangible and tangible, please?
Yes, ma'am.
want to come back to it.
Shine, you want the 9 month capex? One second, I'll just give it to you right away.
Yeah.
So, as Mani just said, it is 390 crores in this for Q3. So, 9 month number is 459, and intangible is 380. So, 844 crores is the total.
Sir, can you repeat, Jason? 459 is?
Fixed asset addition and intangible is 380 and is 844 is the total capex, total asset addition.
Okay. Okay, thanks. And Glenn, you mentioned about cost control measures. Can you give us some more specific, how should we think about it? Because at this point, even if we look at, you know, adjusting for R&D, the overhead seems to be growing at a pace which is at least similar to how the revenues are growing, right? So, you know, any indication on quantum, how should we think about it? How big can that be for you?
So I think next year you should see a substantial improvement at the EBITDA level, right? At least, you know, a couple of percentage points should come on account of various cost improvements, you know, between 1% to 2% improvement at the EBITDA level.
Mm-hmm. So this, the entire exercise will be in FY20 or is it like over a period? And when you think about FY21, is there scope of this to go up further?
I think over time, all I can say, Shayan, is because of all the things that we're doing, right, over time you should see a significant improvement in the parent's margin profile, right, between the spin-out of the R&D business along with certain cost improvements that we've undertaken, right, the overall parent's margin profile should improve substantially.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, I mean, spin-off of R&D and if you get funding, I understand it will be a significant boost. But excluding that part, I'm just saying, you know, the base business, you think 1 to 2% point would be possible?
That's correct.
Next year.
That's correct.
And, you know, the question, I mean, one issue is about the branded business, right, when you roll it out. I don't know what the plan for Realtors in the U.S. is. But there would be overhead costs that will start building on that, right? I mean, I'm just wondering how difficult will that be to get this 1 to 2% improvement, given that overheads?
So obviously, Shine, we've baked everything in our numbers, right? And then I'm guiding, right?
Okay.
So, yeah.
And Glenn, on Realtors, have you decided on how to go about it in the U.S. and also for markets like Japan and Europe, are out-licensing a possibility? What are the thoughts there?
Well, clearly, I think the U.S., you know, we still haven't taken a call between working with a partner or, you know, or going through a contract sales organization. So there are different models we are still looking at. I think, you know, Realtors, we've now partnered in three geographies, right? Australia, South Korea, and China. And clearly we are working on additional partnerships, right? And especially in places where we don't have a footprint.
And what is, you know, is there any licensing income there from Realtors this quarter? And how much has been the licensing income with, you know, three deals that you've done so far?
So, Sayan, in this quarter, there is no licensing income. So far, I mean, the major amount of the Realtors out-licensing income will come in the next quarter, yeah. The Chinese one and the other one.
South Korea.
Yeah, South Korea will come in the next quarter.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Surjit Pal from Prabhudas Liladhar. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Glenn, could you throw some light on how the ongoing, you know, inhaler business going on in your European market?
So I think, you know, we continue to make good progress, right, on the respiratory side in Europe. I mean, we've launched Beclo in the UK. And as far as Salmex goes, we continue to sell it in some geographies in Europe. So I think the pipeline continues to remain strong on the respiratory side.
Okay. Any color on your generic sanitary business in Germany? Because though it is, equivalent to the original, but do you think that it will be easier to penetrate over there, being a generic?
We have an injunction right now in terms of sales of Salmex in Germany, so I can't comment because of the ongoing litigation.
And you have mentioned there are 4 or 5 good interesting products in US. Could you name the products?
No, I mean, we can't disclose what the products are.
And therapeutic area wise or injectable, or if you
no,
can.
we can't give any further visibility.
Thanks for taking the question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Aditya Khetan from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. Glenn, just a couple more. Firstly, on Ryaltris, why was the PDUFA date delayed? And I know you mentioned no further clinical data, but what was it that FDA wanted to examine further?
Well, I mean, I can't comment on... all I can say is there's nothing outstanding from our side, okay, Aditya. It's just a matter of reviewing the data which is already with the FDA. As you know, there was a government shutdown and a lot of things happened in the U.S., right? But there is no, none of it is related to the data or anything pending from our side.
Got it. Okay. And you made a comment, I think Jason made a comment on the European side that, you know, we should take the Europe revenues quarter by quarter and the growth can be lumpy in certain quarters. I presume that's what you mean. So what was it in this quarter that's causing sort of a, you know, a higher growth, and what really should we expect from that geography, honestly, in FY20 or FY21? Over the base that we have in FY19?
Well, I think, you know, Europe, we continue to grow, right, Q over Q, and I think you should see that trend continuing, okay, at least for this year. FY20, again, you know, we will continue to grow the business, but obviously, you know, a lot depends on the product approvals and the pipeline coming through.
Right, but there is no guidance per se on how much we should be penciling in for growth for the European geography.
No, we can't give any visibility to that, Aditya.
Got it. And lastly, the API subsidiarization, I think, was again, in the opening remarks, you mentioned the 9-month growth for the business has been 10-11%. With a healthy margin profile. Could you talk through us as to what's leading to that growth in the API external sales and what could be the trajectory there going forward?
Well, I think, we are able to, gain significantly from some of the new product supplies, right, that we are making into some of the other generic companies, right? Additional sales for products like perindopril, linezolid, lercanidipine, amiodarone, apripatan. These are some of the products which we continue to drive sales.
Right, but is the majority of the sales done domestic, or is the majority, or can you give us a split of the domestic and export within the API sales?
So we do very little domestically. It's all export based.
And primarily destination geography being US and Europe, or other emerging markets as well?
I think the big chunk is still US, Europe, but we do supply some EMs also.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza for closing comments. Over to you.
Thanks. Thank you, moderator. Just to read the disclaimer, the information, statement and analysis made during this call describing the company's objectives, projections and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meaning of applicable security laws and regulations. The analysis contained herein is based on numerous assumptions. Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic condition, government policy and other incidental factors.
No representation or warranty, either expressed or implied, is provided in relation to this presentation. This presentation should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we end Glenmark's Q3 earnings call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, we conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.